Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest podcast, we discuss Bryson DeChambeau's latest win and have a chat with the PGA Tour's newest star, Cameron Champ.
My God, my swing feels like an unfolding lawn chair.
Well, why do they even have one if you're not supposed to hit it there?
Because it's fun! We're having fun!
What is this, custom? Mine's off the rack.
I wish Tiger Woods was here to help me with this.
We'll do it live!
Welcome back to the Golf Digest podcast. I'm Alex Myers. Today I'm joined in studio by Sam Wyman, Hallie Ledbetter. Guys, Bryson DeChambeau, he basically wins every week. He plays now. What is, you know, what's going on with
We're
this
We're in the
guy?
Midst of a Bryson DeChambeau era
This, yeah, you're right.
Last week we talked about the Cameron Champ era.
Yeah, and we said they can overlap.
Okay.
Well, but this is the Bryson DeChambeau era. He's won four of his last 11 starts. You know, we keep trotting out, poor Ricky Fowler always gets dragged into this, or at least I drag him into this. But he's won now as many times in the last 5 months as Ricky Fowler's won in his entire career.
Right.
Just PGA Tour, official PGA Tour wins. I know Ricky's won other. I know people come out and, oh, Ricky won the Hero Challenge and this and that. But Bryson DeChambeau has five career PGA Tour titles. That's on the Tom Lehman level now. He's already there. He's won four this year. Obviously, three counted for last season. This one's going to count for next season. He's up to number five in the world. Is he the next number one player in the world?
We shall see. I mean, that's a whole other discussion point about how much it fluctuates these days. But the trajectory he's on, and if he keeps winning at this clip, then he's gonna surpass a lot of the guys who are ahead of him.
No, I agree. What I find interesting is, so Cobra came out with those irons that are all the same length, but have you guys ever met anybody that has attempted to adopt the Bryson DeChambeau method?
Well, that was a discussion point we were having the other day, and I know a lot of people who are definitely intrigued by it.
Yes.
Pulling the trigger and actually doing it.
I've never seen it, but we did have those clubs, and Ryan Harrington,
right?
He took them. He's going to try it out. And we'll see.
He likes to experiment, Ryan.
He does. And you know what? Our equipment guys, Mike Satura and Mike Johnson, they both said that it can work for you. I mean, where I just don't get it is, why would you want a wedge to be the same length as the 6-iron?
Well, I think my understanding is that what you're losing in terms of some feel, perhaps, and having a pretty long shaft for a wedge, is the fact that all these adjustments that we make between clubs, in different length, different stance, is no longer an issue.
Right.
So you're gaining something there.
Yeah.
I agree. It doesn't feel right to me, but then again, I'm just a natural ball striker, so I hit it so purely. I don't really have these problems. So.
I mean, it probably would feel better if you're hitting a 4-iron and the club's short. But who hits a 4-iron even these days? You don't hit one, right?
Chris Powers hits them.
He hits a 3-iron.
And a 2-iron.
A 3-iron. That's right. Hallie, what about you? Have you seen it out there in the wilderness of golf?
I haven't. Yeah. I have not seen anybody do it. That's why I'm interested to see. I mean, you've got the so the same length clubs. Now we've got putting with the pin in.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What are your
thoughts on that, guys?
Yeah. No, that was our next Bryson topic.
Yeah.
He's an interesting cat. I mean, he's probably on to something here. Apparently, he's always left it in when he's putted from the fringe. He did that on 16 when he made the eagle putt, although it wouldn't have mattered. The ball basically just dropped into the hole. But he's saying that this new rule, which will go into effect 2019, you can putt with the pin in. It was kind of a rule made to speed up play for when we're out there hacking around. We don't have to remove it. He's saying it makes the hole bigger because you can bounce balls in.
Right. It's a little bit of a backstop.
Exactly. And he talks about the coefficient of restitution, which I'm sure you guys are all.
Right. That has to do with the fact that certain flag sticks, the ball will carom off of it more.
Yes, exactly. The definition is the ratio of the final to initial relative velocity between two objects after they collide. But like you said, Sam, it's basically how hard will it bounce off it?
I mean, for me, it's just aesthetically, I don't like putting with a flag stick in. It just feels like, even when you're on a practice green and you have...
That's probably because you're used to it.
No, I know, you're right. If you gave me proof that I was going to make... You know, two more putts around having the pin in, which is probably not the case. It's probably like two more putts a season that you would make. I guess, but again, I feel like it's just a jarring look to me. I'm such a purist again, so.
But when you practice putt and you know they have the little pins or whatever.
I don't like it. I don't. I like.
But
it
you
having,
keep, you don't
like,
you putt to it. You don't take it out, do you?
No, I do. I take it out. It's my
you
point.
Take it out.
I feel like I
really.
I, yes.
You do too.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I like kind of drilling it off the stick.
So there you go. Yeah. You're,
I'll leave it in if I'm practicing lag putts to sort of simulate what it would be like if somebody was tending it for me.
Okay.
But if I'm practicing 15 feet or less, then it's definitely coming out.
By the way, Hallie is the first Golf Digest podcast panelist who is a professional golfer. We've had, obviously, guests who are professional golfers.
Well, but she has been on the podcast before. Not in studio, though.
Right.
Right. But yes, who is a professional
Yes,
golfer.
So she's coming at it from a completely different perspective. So you have, very high-level amateurs like you and I. And then, why are you laughing at that? Why is that funny? And then a professional golfer.
Well, you can see the difference because she's talking about practicing, pretending that someone's tending the flag.
Right.
I mean, I would never think of that. That's amazing. Bryson is amazing because he says these things. He said he said something else this week that he wants to be neurologically comfortable, and that got people asking him, "Well, what does that mean?" And he was like, "Oh, it's a secret." And anything he says now gets people talking.
Yes.
His press conferences are as exciting as his rounds of golf. You just never know what he's going to say.
I agree. And I would say is that the great tendency for so many of us is that we overcomplicate the game. We make the game more complicated. And here's a guy who makes the game so unbelievably complicated.
Yeah.
But in his way, it works for him because I think it's like he believes in all these things. And it's sort of like, even if it's a placebo effect, it has this sort of effect where it fuels his confidence and his belief, like, oh, because I'm in the right neurological place or whatever, and the flag sticks in, and all these things that we are adding to the complication of the game, making the game more challenging, it somehow infuses him with some greater self-belief.
Well, he's constantly looking for an edge, any edge. Even, like you said, maybe leaving the flag stick in is two putts over the whole year. To him, that's a big deal. Any edge he looks for, that's why we've seen him already have these couple run-ins with the USGA. He did the side saddle. They ruled his putter, center-shafted putter, illegal. He had the compass, the drawing compass. They ruled that illegal. Even after that, John Bodenheimer from the USGA said, "We applaud this guy because he's really pushing the limit." And now Bryson's already said, "The USGA might want to rethink this pin thing. We're going to see what happens." He's going to take advantage of it. He's going to keep pushing the limits, pushing the rules, not bending the rules or anything, but just taking them to the max, kind of challenging the USGA. We'll see what happens. But he certainly, he thinks of every possible angle that could help him.
In your competitive days, Hallie, have you ever come across someone who even remotely thinks the game the way he does?
Never. I think it goes back to what you said, Sam. Most people play better when they simplify things.
Right.
And that's what I always did. I always got too complicated.
Sure.
So I can't imagine having that many thoughts running through my head as Bryson does. But no, I've never come across anybody.
The one thing that I do agree with him on, and I feel like he is onto something, is controlling your breath. You know, we had that whole discussion about meditation, how I believe feel about that. Yeah. But I do feel like having a control of your breath, which controls your nerves, is a potential breakthrough for the way people think about the game. Because if you can harness your nervous energy in a constructive way by controlling your breathing, which he's a big believer in, I feel like that has residual effects, not just on the PGA Tour, but for the average player as well.
Maybe the most amazing part of this win, and Sam, you're a hockey guy, Bryson suffered a hockey injury Saturday.
He regains my respect as a result of that.
The night before his round, you know, he wasn't playing hockey. He went to the Las Vegas Golden Knights game. He did something where they rev up the crowd. He did this crank. There's a video of it. And he says he ripped part of his hand off. I'm sure he's exaggerating
a little.
But he did say that on every shot or when he gripped that it hurt that final day. I don't know. Just what was your reaction to that, Sam?
Well, it's further proof that the Las Vegas Golden Knights are always – they're also pushing the envelope.
They are.
Interesting. I don't know what to think of it other than, you know, sometimes – people who are distracted by something like a hand injury and they sort of lower expectations. Maybe he was dealing with it, and because of that, he just sort of played and didn't and wasn't thinking in the same way he was, and maybe in a strange way helped him. Obviously, it wasn't terribly damaging to his performance, so I don't think it was that big a deal.
No, I mean, he shot 66. What did you think? Yeah.
But you guys, have you guys ever had a blister ripped off your hand?
Oh, yeah.
That hurts.
Yeah. Yes. No,
that really hurts.
I think he was in pain. I do. I think he was probably embarrassed also, and I don't think we would have heard about this had he lost.
Right.
I feel like this was the kind of thing like, okay, now I got through this. I won. I still shot 66, so it didn't affect me that much. But now I can laugh about this. Whereas, you know, Rory McIlroy injures himself playing soccer, mm-hmm. and everybody's killing him for
Jim
the next.
Jim Furyk brushing his teeth.
Brushing
That's the
his
all-time
teeth.
Great one. Right.
Right. Right. You know, you get made fun of for a long time. So, you know, good for him. He was able to stick through. He got it. Another win. And, you know, I was thinking about this. He's all about math, science. He's got to be a card counter at the casino. He's got to go in there and just kill it at the blackjack table.
I would think so. I mean, he's definitely not going there going by feel.
Right.
He's got a whole system.
He wouldn't be throwing away the money he made. I bet he killed it in
well,
Vegas.
Well, we always talk about the similarities between him and Phil. Well, obviously, Phil's a master. I don't know if Phil's a card counter, but he's definitely a guy who has some real high-level
thoughts. Phil's
a
guy who thinks he's got high-level gambling thoughts. I think Bryson actually would kind of incorporate them and be a little smarter about it. Anyway, speaking of, you know, we talked about maybe Bryson on his way up to number one. Justin Rose is back at number one. He won the Turkish Airlines Open. It was a crazy finish. Both he and Haotong Li missed par putts on the last hole of about 5 feet. And then Haotong Li had a 10-footer for the win in the playoff hole and walked off the green losing. I've never seen anything like that. I mean, I feel bad for him, but I know the bigger story is Rose. Yeah. Rose back to number one. We've talked about him before. We kind of said he doesn't really win enough. Now he's starting to pile up the wins.
Right, right. And but the thing is what's propelled him to number one and what is the difference is consistency.
Yeah.
And like we say that for a guy to take over as number one, like if Bryson were to take over as number one, not only does he need to get on a really continue this hot streak, but he needs all these other guys to fade a little bit and have some off weeks. And Justin Rose doesn't have off weeks. So it's very hard for him to go through a week without accumulating serious world ranking points.
Yeah.
So that's a big part of it. So even if he falls off for a week, he's going to come back the next week and probably and retake the ranking.
Hallie, how impressed have you been with Justin Rose? I mean, the last – you know, we've known about this guy forever. Obviously, he won the U.S. Open 5 years ago, but now he's become, you know, this superstar.
Yeah, I think he's really just found that confidence that you need to stay consistent. I actually got to spend some time. We're talking about Cameron Champ. Cameron Champ's coach is Sean Foley. That also happens to be Justin Rose's coach. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting, you know, with the FedEx Cup and Justin Rose is right there at the end. Or no, he won it. He won it, and it was close with Tiger there for a little while. And Sean Foley was telling me he was watching Justin Rose, and he could barely watch because he was so nervous himself. But Justin just seemed so confident and so calm. So I think there's definitely been a mindset change for him.
And, you know, speaking of the world rankings and Tiger, we had a little unusual thing happen. Well, not unusual, but just surprising. Because a year ago, Tiger still hadn't come back. He hadn't even hit a shot at the Hero. He'd posted, I think, by this time, the picture of him hitting a driver for the first time. A year later, he is now number 13 in the world, which is nothing new because that's what he moved up to after he won the Tour Championship. But he's now ahead of Jordan Spieth in the world ranking, which is amazing. Because, so who? I guess, what are you more surprised by, Tiger being 13 or Spieth being 14?
Well, I mean, again, if you were going to ask me this a year ago, there's no question I'd be more surprised that it would be Tiger.
Yes.
But you know, given the direction we're heading, I'm just surprised that Jordan Spieth kind of hasn't shaken himself out of this. I wouldn't call it a slump, but he certainly hasn't been playing at the level he was playing a couple of years ago. So I continue to expect him to find his way out of it and, you know, start rattling off some wins, contend in majors, and I guess I'm a little bit surprised that it's not happened yet.
Mm. What do you think, Allie? Which surprises you more?
Jordan, I think. Yeah. I mean, he didn't win anything last year, and I was reading through an interview that he did. I believe it was after one of his rounds that he had last week at Shriners, and he said he had some bad lies at the beginning. He was hitting it in the middle of the fairway but kept getting in divots, and then he was like, yeah, and after that it was just kind of hard to stay motivated. And I was like, that's such a weird answer.
Yeah.
What do you mean it's hard to stay motivated? You're at the beginning of the season. You should be like ready to go trying to, like, I don't know. I just thought that was a bit weird. So maybe his
but I think that's actually something that people don't recognize as a challenge for tour players, is that especially when you get to that level where you've won three majors, is that once you start winning tournaments, it's like really hard to grind it out for a T30 or a top 15.
Yeah.
You know, it's like once you start saying a successful week for me is a win, and maybe, you know, top five. After that, it's just hard to maintain the same level of focus.
Like, why grind? Just maybe go home.
And he never really had to grind. I mean, right. I mean, I guess very early on in his rookie year, you know, he's trying to keep his card and earn his card. So there was a point where that, you know, every little bit counted.
Right.
But once you've achieved the level that he has, it's just hard to keep going.
Yeah, no, I mean, there are definitely players out there. I'm not saying Jordan Spieth is one of those, but who don't, if they're not going to win, they don't grind. That's for sure. But, you know, he opened with a 66.
I know.
He was kind of in the mix. Even, I think the second day was even, but, you know, the third day, that was the day Lucas Glover shot 61. I mean, you know, he could have done that, vaulted up the board. He didn't. Ricky Fowler did it the last day. You know, he just, I know he had a new driver. He's switching back now.
Yeah,
so there was definitely different things happening. And it's also interesting because he didn't expect to start his season here. I think we all kind of figured this is him paying back the tour for violating that policy last year. He only played 24 events. He missed by one because he didn't make the tour championship. So he played the Vegas event for the first time. He's playing this week as well at Mayakoba. You know, if you're a fantasy guy, you probably wouldn't expect too much from him then, based on the way he showed it. But no, I'm with you guys, with both you guys, because once Tiger showed he was kind of back early on this year, we knew he could win. But Spieth, we just kind of kept thinking he was going to win eventually. I mean, we were at the Open, and through three rounds, it was like he's going to win. He's going to defend his titles, win another Claret Jug. Obviously, at the Masters, he almost won two. So it's crazy he almost won two majors, but really nowhere else did he even come close to winning. So it's a bizarre year. But obviously, Tiger, it just goes back to, you know, the year he's come, the comeback, how far he's come. It's remarkable. Switching gears here, we had a kind of a weird situation in LPGA Q School or Q Series. First of all, it's eight rounds they play?
Yeah.
What
so,
a grind fest.
Yeah, they did a lot of changes to LPGA Q School each year. So they have eight rounds for the final stage, and it's four rounds on one course and then a break and then four rounds on another course. And I guess the thought behind it is to really just let the cream rise.
Yeah.
There's another interesting thing that a lot of my friends that are out on tour are have different viewpoints on, and one of that is letting these girls that are in college play in Q School and then defer their card until they're after playing. And one of the thoughts is that by allowing that to happen, you're taking all the pressure off these girls and just letting them play, and so they're getting their spots, where these other girls are trying to grind knowing they have all this on the line.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that they're different situations.
It's also going
to
be difficult.
It was interesting.
It's also going to be difficult where it's like if you finish whatever the – I don't even know what the – how many places get in, but, you know –
It's 45.
45. Mm-hmm. So if you finish 47th in the series, and then but three of those players ahead of you deferred.
Oh yeah,
and not knowing that's got to be a difficult existence as well.
But then you get in, right?
I understand.
Yeah,
my point is, it's just like not knowing what that means at the time.
Right.
I guess it's
and then like what in a few months are you out and then they're back in?
No,
like,
totally.
I don't know.
So
really
well,
works.
Yeah, and then when the people defer, is that going to take like let's say eight people defer to next year? Is that eight spots that they take off or
not really?
But even if they don't. You know, we always hear about how hard it is to get into LPGA events, even if you have a card. And so now you're going to have way more than the 45 people if you're adding in deferments. So I could see it being a little bit of a messy
situation. I see both parts. I think it's got to be frustrating as a pro because there's all these great college players that, you know, are just out there freewheeling it, no pressure at all.
Right.
But then you're out there grinding, trying to get your spot.
Right.
But then I also think it's great for women's golf because you're going to have all these young stars out there soon.
And if you're the LPGA, you want the best players making the tour. That's why you stretch it out as long as you are.
Yeah. No, that makes sense for them. So we're in the seventh round here of eight rounds. Doris Chen, former NCAA champ at USC 2014. She hits a shot on, I think, the last hole, and she's looking for it. And eventually they find it. And someone, you know, it got moved, but she plays it. And it comes out that it had been out of bounds and moved back in bounds, possibly by her mom, which in her quotes even, she says her mom didn't do it. First of all, she says, I was not directly involved. So that's interesting to me. Then her mom's her caddy, by the way. Then she says, My mom didn't do it, but if she did, it could have been an accident. So,
right. Well, I mean, what is she going to say? Yeah, you got us.
Spot.
You got us. We're trying to sneak one past you.
Yeah,
it's ugly. It's an ugly situation, and it's unfortunately, as we've seen, and I hope for this girl's sake and for her mother's sake that what she's saying is true. It was an innocuous mistake, but what we've seen time and time again is that once someone has this label attached to them, even tangentially, it's really hard to shake it.
Right.
And how do you accidentally kick a ball back in bounds,
yeah,
though? That's the other
exactly.
thing. You know?
I mean, if you're looking in, right, even, right, and if the caddy kicks it or something, isn't that a penalty anyway?
Yeah, your ball, yeah.
I mean, like by accident, if you're looking in a bush or something and you step,
either way, it's not, there's some sort of penalty there.
It's not good. Well, she got disqualified, right after the round. And I mean, we're talking about this, you're talking about players, and including her, are grinding for their livelihood. And, you have to be confident. I know you know this, Hallie, more than anybody. I mean, if you're out there playing your game, you have to be confident that someone else isn't cheating to take
totally.
A spot,
yeah.
to take your spot. You have to be confident that, the rules officials will be on it and everything else. And this isn't a PGA Tour event where there's a million people
right.
all around. It's got to be tough to – I mean, were you ever in a tournament where you –
Were
worried
you
that something. Well, yeah. Were you blatantly
now,
cheated?
I kicked a few balls back in bounds in my time.
No, but where you were worried that something had happened and you just have no control over it.
Yeah, I heard about things happening in other
sure.
groups, and it would be a lot of hearsay.
Mm-hmm.
I heard so and so and so and so's group did this,
right.
and it was really it was just an awkward situation when people cheated. Luckily, I never had that
mm-hmm.
never happened to me, but. You would hear about girls because you were always told on the first tee, or
right.
we were just kind of beaten into us from junior golf, you were responsible for protecting the other players in the
right.
field. So if you're suspicious of anything, but obviously it always comes down to the player. So if the player's
sure.
like, I didn't do it, then that's where that
right.
that it ends there. But you are responsible for protecting the rest of the field as well. So it did get a bit awkward if you started pointing
yeah.
fingers.
Right. Like Sam said, though, I mean, once you get this reputation, and we're just talking about players who we've heard of, if you were actually in the heat of things, I mean, I'm sure, I'm not asking you to name names, obviously. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've heard of people specifically who might even be on tour now. And once they get that rep, they kind of have it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You say someone's name, like, oh, she's a cheater.
Right.
And you're like, oh, it was. And again, like you said, once it's there, it's there.
Yeah.
It was like back in 2008 at the junior whatever,
right,
whatever.
Right.
And you're like, oh, okay. But yeah, it definitely does stick
and
with
it
them.
It often feels like the stories you hear are qualifiers, like Monday qualifiers.
Yeah.
Oh,
Q
yeah.
School because,
yeah.
The most is at stake. I mean, arguably more at stake than a major championship because you're talking about livelihoods.
Right.
And then B, there's no cameras on people.
Right.
There's no one. There's not huge galleries following
cameras,
you.
No huge galleries. No as many marshals and
right.
volunteers. And
I think you'd be surprised how many times parents are actually involved in these things.
I'm sure.
Well, yeah.
Especially if their livelihood rests on their kids' livelihood.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
That's true.
I didn't spend, $25,000 on golf lessons
right.
for you to not qualify. I'm just going to foot wedge just back into the fairway.
Anyway, it's terrible, weird situation. We hope, like Sam said, we hope it's not true, but it's out there anyway. All right, happier note, Cameron Champ. He has burst onto the scene these last few weeks. Even this past week after his breakthrough win, he was right in the hunt going into Sunday. After a great third round, had a bad Sunday, backed up, I think, to T28, but I think he was fifth or sixth place going into Sunday. So, had a chance at two straight wins. We were lucky enough to talk to him. He we've talked about his distance, everything else. I mean, he's instantly the longest
sure.
player on tour. If you watch the broadcast, one of the most entertaining things is hearing, and it's happened to be Bones, who's out there. Every time he hits a drive, Bones has to think of something different to say. So
yeah.
Bones is like, oh, he absolutely blistered this one, or he absolutely launched this missile. And it's like, oh, every time
right,
without
right.
fail. He's already one of the most exciting players. But there was one hole where I was going crazy on our Slack channel. Bones said, well, I don't know. He may have gone out of bounds there. There's a lot of houses down on that line. And then they get down there, and he'd sailed all the houses. And he was in the rough, and he'd gone 403 yards in the rough. So he's playing just a different game right now. But anyway, and I know you, Hallie, you got to spend a little time with him as well at a recent shoot.
Yeah, so he's on the cover of our November issue. Yep. And
props to Golf Digest.
Yes,
great time.
Yes. And so I got the opportunity to spend the day with him at TPC Sawgrass. And what a nice kid. Mm-hmm. So down to earth. I mean, that was right before he won his tour event, you know, so got to speak with him a little bit. He was really excited about getting out there. Obviously, he said his biggest strength was his driver. so he said he was just excited to get out there and compare his game to the best in the world, which he's doing a great job of.
He's doing a great job. Yeah. And you're right. He does seem like a great kid. Even I talked to him right after the win, very humble, going to finish out this fall season because he'd signed up for all the tournaments and everything else. So golf fans get to see him the next couple weeks as well. Anyway, please have a listen to our talk with Cameron Champ.
Before we go on, let me talk for a second about Golf Digest Schools. Golf Digest Schools is our new cutting-edge video instruction platform offering more than 250 classes on every part of the game and featuring the leading teachers in golf, from Butch Harmon to David Ledbetter to Michael Breed. Unlike the quick tips you can find across the internet, these are full game improvement programs meant to be followed step by step as if you were working with a pro. It's like Masterclass meets Netflix, but even better because there's the added promise of feedback. To sign up for Golf Digest Schools, go to golfdigest.com/allaccess and use promo code SCHOOLS to get 30% off an annual subscription. Again, golfdigest.com/allaccess and use promo code SCHOOLS.
All right, I'm excited to welcome to the Golf Digest podcast for the first time, Cameron Champ. Cameron, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, of course, no problem.
Yeah, man, I mean, congratulations first off, winning your first PGA Tour title. Just your second start as a PGA Tour member. What have these past few days been like for you, and how did you celebrate?
It's definitely been unreal, just how fast everything's gone. Like I said in previous years, last year this time I was still in school, going through Q school and all that, and now I'm here. So I think it was probably one of the blue golf I think I've probably ever played. Just dealing with what I dealt with on the front nine and then being able to pull it off on the backside. It was just nice to see that, you know, all the hard work over the years paid off. And luckily I had some family friends fly in and surprise me Sunday morning before my tee time. So afterwards was definitely nice to hang out with them and just enjoy it with them and my family.
That's great. Yeah, you mentioned obviously things got a little tight after that front nine. I'm sure, you know, you would have rather just cruised the whole way, but now that you did, you were able to finish like you did with those 5 out of 6 birdies to win in that way. Is that better now for you going forward that you were able to kind of handle that adversity and finish like that?
I think so, just because, you know, it was my first ever position or first ever time being in that position with the lead. With a decent amount of lead going in a Sunday. So, you know, on the front side, I was a little bit nervous, but I wasn't, you know, nothing crazy. I just really didn't get much going. You know, I hit some good putts. I think I had like 2 lip outs on 3 and 4 that looked like good looks. Obviously made a few shaky swings on, I think it was 7 and 8, but besides that, I think it was definitely satisfying. Just, like I said, being able to do it, being able to do it when I needed to.
Yeah, take me through that shot on 18, because obviously you have a 2-shot lead. You're kind of in a little bit of a tough spot there. You pull off, I mean, it's, you know, we're early in the season, but it's going to be tough for anyone to top that shot in that condition. What was going through your mind? Was there any thought to just kind of hit a normal punch out, or were you going for it all the way?
Mm-hmm. And the way the lie was, it just set up, you know, if I can just, you know, try to get some jaw spin on it, you know, it could possibly get on the green, which was basically the 2 options I was playing. You know, I figured it'd be a lot easier just to punch it up there than trying to kind of, you know, hit a 60 degree over the tree and then have kind of a short-sighted, you know, 50-yard shot. So, you know, I will say, like I said, it was, my goal was but you know, I had just enough draw on it for it to, you know, skip up there on the green.
Yeah, well, it made for an incredible finish, and you know, there was a World Golf Championship going on. Obviously, there's football going on Sunday, but you know, you really drew such attention to an event that, you know, doesn't usually get that much attention. Were you almost surprised? I mean, I guess you were playing, so you didn't realize it as it was going on, but you know, Twitter was going crazy and everything else. Were you surprised by how much attention your win did receive?
I would definitely say so.
Yeah.
Like I said, I mean, this is all new to me. Obviously, it's a little different stage than the web.com tour. A lot more people, and just a lot more people watching it in general. So, I would definitely say I was.
You know, obviously, when you win like this, and you know, so quickly, people start to make comparisons and everything else. How do you manage kind of the expectations now? Because, you know, I don't know if you expected to win this quickly, but once you do, it now seems like the expectations just go up to another level.
Yeah, honestly, I don't even worry about that stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't pay attention to media or any of that stuff anymore, mm-hmm. really. So that's something that I've kind of learned myself, and something, you know, my team has kind of talked to me about, you know, besides what's going on with me, my family, my team, what I'm trying to do, you know, nothing else to me really matters. So
sure.
That's just kind of how I'm trying to go about it. And that's kind of just, like I said, what I've learned this year, and just, you know, like I said, how I'm going to start going about things.
Yeah. Speaking of your team, obviously such a great moment. You walk off the green, your dad's there, gives you a big hug. He's got your grandpa, Mac, on the phone, who I understand got you into golf. How cool was that? And I assume you've maybe gotten to talk to Mac even more since the win.
Oh yeah, it was awesome. You know, like I said, it was just all these years of, you know, sacrifice my parents made and just the hard work, the hours and hours on the golf course after school growing up, and then just for it to pay off so fast. You know, like I said, it's been a crazy year.
Yeah.
PGA Tour winner, my second start as a member, so it's just nice to see, you know, like I said, everything pay off over the years.
What are you going to do with that Rooster Trophy? Where's that going to go? That's kind of one of the funny, cool trophies in golf.
Yeah, yeah. Either I'm going to keep it, or it's probably going to my parents' house. So my last two trophies have gone to my parents' house, but we'll see about this one. I think this one might have to stay with me.
Now, you know, you mentioned also, we were talking about your team. Obviously, you've been working with Sean Foley for a long time. I think since you were 15. You know, how did that come about, and how cool is that? You started to work with someone who was at the same time coaching Tiger Woods. I mean, how did that, was that as a 15-year-old, did you even comprehend how amazing that was?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. He was still caddying for Hunter. Now he caddies for Tooch, and he just kind of, you know, told Sean about me. And at the time, I didn't really have a coach. Mm-hmm. I was kind of seeing a few people here or there, but didn't have anyone steady. So he kind of got us in contact. And then, you know, after the first time I saw him, it just kind of ran from there. And we've been working to get together ever since.
Now, you know, obviously, your driving stats are what gets everybody going crazy. But you were second this week in strokes gained putting. So, I mean, obviously, I mean, that's not fair of a combination. Where do you assess your putting? You know, is that something that obviously you're working on, but is that a strength also, or was this a hot week, or, you know, what can we expect from you?
Mm-hmm. At times, but now that I've kind of found one that I like, that fits my stroke and whatnot, you know, I'm definitely not going to be switching anytime soon, but it's definitely part of my game. I've been working extremely hard this year. That's one thing I've noticed. Like I said, I've been a kind of hot and cold putter, and without getting my ball striking, you know, I give myself so many chances for around. So.
Right. What are you specifically working on with Sean now, you know, in your game?
As far as just any aspect of my game?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess more on the ball striking side. I mean, is there anything that you are tweaking right now with the driver, or are you just kind of in a good zone right now and you don't mess with things?
Yeah, I don't really mess with things. Obviously, last week was kind of a weird situation when I broke my driver, like, before my tee time.
Right.
Which wasn't the best timing, but, yeah, this week, as soon as I got in on Monday, we figured some things out. I actually been switching driver shafts, which found that works extremely better, which I wasn't even trying.
Hmm. How many times has that happened to you? How many times has that happened to you when you've broken a driver? Has it happened before?
It's happened before, not really with the pings. It's more of the face will just kind of like cave in slightly, and I can just tell it'll start spinning a lot.
Right.
Just kind of going everywhere. But that was my first time ever, you know, cracking a ping driver straight across the top of the face.
Yeah, you know, Sean has compared you to Usain Bolt, and it's just with, I guess, the speed. Obviously, the comparison works, your swing speed and everything, but just in terms of, you know, that speed being such a different level than other people. I wonder, at what age did you first kind of realize that you were hitting the ball past the other kids your age? Like, did it happen early on, or is it something that happened later on?
No, I'd probably say, you know, my early teens, like 10 through 12, probably.
Okay.
Kind of when I really started to notice. And then, like I said, as the years went on, I gradually got longer and longer as I grew and just matured into my body. So, yeah, I'd definitely say probably around 10 to 12 years old.
Okay. Did you win any, were there any long drive contests? Maybe not amongst kids, but even like, did you ever play in a pro-am or something and win a long drive contest or anything like that?
I'm pretty sure I have, but I can't recall exactly, honestly.
Okay. One stat that jumps out at me, when you won in Utah last year on the web.com tour, you averaged 391 off the tee. I mean, it's just kind of, these numbers are crazy. Have you already... does everybody else on tour already kind of know that you're this kind of freakishly long guy? Is that reputation out there already?
I would guess so. I mean, based off my stats, everyone talks about. So,
right.
Obviously everyone knows, you know, I'm long, but like I said, at the end of the day, I just try to, you know, block all that out. Cause I mean, you can hit it long and you can have a terrible iron game and putting game and short game and, you know, you can lose your card like that. So that's kind of how I look at it. And just, you know, I want all other aspects of my game to be just as good as my ball striking and distance, I guess.
Sure. Did that power that you have, did that show up in any other sports that you played growing up?
No, I mean, the only other sport I really played was basketball, really.
Okay.
That was kind of the only, I mean, I played baseball, when I was younger, but I just really liked golf better. Kind of my escape sport was basketball.
Sure. Well, you know, you're kind of the first person where ball speed is now this big thing. I feel like we've always heard about clubhead speed, but your ball speed is like 10 miles an hour faster than the next guy. And you hit these kind of, you have this like lower trajectory maybe than most. And there was a video PGA Tour, I think, tweeted out last week of you hitting a drive, and it just kind of went viral because of the trajectory. Was that a low one on purpose, or is that kind of your, I mean, that's your go-to shot?
No, that was a low one on purpose.
Okay.
That was just the way the hole was. Like, it was number six. It kind of set up weird for me, and I got a kind of hit it low and just run it underneath the tree on the left. So I was just trying to hit it just a low screen of driver.
Okay.
Which obviously, you know, like I said, everyone was thinking that's like my normal ball.
Yeah.
I definitely don't launch it a three every single time.
Okay. That's good to know. You know, obviously it's your first season on tour. You have the win under your belt now. Does that free you up a little more down for the rest of the season? And what events are you particularly looking forward to in your first full year on tour?
It makes it just a lot less stressful. I mean, you know, I'm exempt for this year and then two more years. So
yeah.
just to have that relief kind of off my back, and now I can just go out and play and just be aggressive. It's probably one of the best links I think I've ever had, just knowing that I have a spot to play, you know, for such a long time and can improve as a player. And as far as tournaments go, obviously, you know, tournament champions, that's one, I've watched as a kid since I was little. So, I kind of always dreamed about going and playing. So I think probably, the first event I'm most excited for is that one.
Cool. You mentioned your back, and I know obviously as a freshman at Texas A&M, you did have some injuries to your back.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe you've kind of like snuck up on everyone in the last year. Is that why? I mean, I know your junior year, you were an All-American, you had a really good year, but your freshman, sophomore year, is that kind of, did the injuries kind of hold you back there?
Well, yeah. I mean, I didn't really play my first 2 years of college. So,
okay. Yeah.
I mean, I got hurt the first week of school.
Oh, man.
Tried to play my first event, had to back out. And then it was just a struggle for a year and a half, figuring out what was actually wrong, how can I fix it. And then once I actually saw the right doctor and whatnot, I was fine within a few months. And then that was kind of my spring of my sophomore year. I kind of played a few events and played decent. And then, obviously my junior year was pretty solid from then.
Right. Yeah, I mean, because obviously you were one of the biggest recruits in the country coming out of high school. So it's just an interesting trajectory because, right, you kind of like disappeared for a little, but now you're, in the last year, like you said, you've just kind of flown up the ladder again. I wonder what do you do for fun on the road? You're obviously traveling so much more now. You're a pro. What do you do for fun on the road? How do you keep busy off the course?
Off the course? I mean, when I'm home, I'm a pretty relaxed and chill guy. I just like hanging out with friends. I'm a very outdoorsy guy. This December I'm going to be doing a lot of hunting and stuff. So that's kind of my escape, I guess you can say that, and cars and trucks and stuff like that. So, definitely this off season will be nice in December. Just get a nice little break before, busy year ahead. But I would definitely say those are kind of, what I go to when I'm not playing golf.
Okay. Do you have any hidden talents? You mentioned you played basketball. Can you dunk? Can you do anything like that?
I think I've only dunked like once.
Okay.
And it was because it was an old court and it was kind of springy, but besides that, that's pretty much the only time I've ever dunked. So.
The court was springy. you're playing this week, obviously, in Las Vegas. I wonder what's your schedule like for the fall before you kind of get that little break? Are you packing in a lot of events, or are you going to take it easy?
No, I'm going to play out the rest of the fall since it's only 4 weeks in a row. So
right.
We're here in Vegas this week, and then Mike Tilba next week, and then the RSN at Seattle. And so I'm just going to finish it out, like I said, since it's not – it's not 6 weeks in a row. It's a decent stretch to get under my belt before, obviously, January comes.
What does it feel like showing up at this next event after you win? Do you feel a lot more eyes on you? Do you feel differently in the way like you carry yourself now that you're a winner, or has it not really even sunk in yet?
I mean, I definitely carry myself more confidently, but I mean, I'm always going to be the same person. That's just kind of how I've been raised. It doesn't matter, if you have 50 wins or you make this much money or whatnot. I'm always going to be the same person. But obviously, just for golf purposes, it gave me a huge load of confidence just knowing, feeling like I can win out here. I'm just as good as these guys. I think it's just a big motivator for me. Just to keep getting better and just to see what good things I did last week and the stuff I did bad. So,
Now that you do have the win, I assume that was one of your goals, maybe coming into the year. Have your goals shifted now going forward?
No, not really. For me,
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I set pretty decent goals. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, it's my first year out here. You know, I'm not trying to do anything fancy. I just want to just play my game and, at the end of the day, just kind of see where I fare. So.
Are there any guys who you're really looking forward to getting to play with this year, getting paired with?
Well, obviously Tiger.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you know, watching, you know, Jordan and Ricky and Justin and Brooks and DJ, guys like that, you know, like I said, those are the guys I was watching not too long ago. So just to be able to be out here on the same tour as them and get the chance to play with them and, like I said, improving as a player is awesome.
Sure. Did you ever have any interactions with Tiger through Sean?
Well, I met Tiger this year at Riviera when I got the Charlie.
Oh, sure. Sure. Yeah.
Extension. So that was kind of first meet.
Right.
Meeting with him. But, you know, obviously, hopefully there's more to come.
Sure. Sure. Well, congratulations on the first win, Cameron. I'm sure it's the first of many. Thank you for taking the time to join us, and good luck the rest of the season.
Awesome. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
All right, man. Take care.
Take care.
Thanks again to Cameron Champ for joining us. Obviously, we have a lot to look forward to watching him play. He's already one of the most exciting players on tour. Sam, last week we did a series where you asked a question, a very important question, bump it or flop it.
Right.
I said I was
Did you
starting,
get any feedback on social media?
Did not,
most people
did
agree
not.
With me, as
it
you
did,
know,
did
because
not.
I was right.
People like my...
Are you more of a bumper or a flopper, Hallie?
Yeah.
We're talking about golf. Yeah.
Flopper.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Allie's got skills. She gets it.
She's a millennial. Yeah, that's why.
I said I was going to start the never bump movement.
Yeah, that's good. That was clever.
That was good. And but anyway, Sam, you're back with another
yeah, so this segment's
hypothetical
called
game.
Would you play? And it's tied play? To reality because, as you know, our big company golf tournament is Friday.
Yes.
And the forecast is
dicey,
to say the daunting.
Least.
It's like 48 degrees and rainy. Yeah. So the question is kind of coming up with would you play? Because I think all of us on our side are, you know, we want to err on the side of playing, but
right.
certain situations make that cause for second thought. So first one would be, number one, super fun company outing, scramble format, mm-hmm. a lot of drinks involved, but 48 degrees and raining. Would you play?
I'll let you go.
I'll play.
You're a gamer.
You're
not a delicate flower like Alex.
I am a delicate flower, but I would still play. I have played in those situations because you just can't. First of all, it's a numbers thing. I don't want to throw off the group. We're doing a whole pairing selection. So because of all that, I'll play.
Fear of ridicule is basically why you wouldn't play.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. I will not be happy. I will not enjoy it.
At all?
Maybe a little. We'll see. If it's 48 and a drizzle and not a lot of wind, if it's 42 and pouring, I will not enjoy it.
Well, actually, that's another – we could call this not instead of would you play, is yeah. that fun? It's Ooh, a whole other thing.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to play,
yeah.
but, like, is that enjoyable?
Right.
So,
yeah.
all right, so basically you would play,
I'm
but it
play.
Wouldn't be enjoyable.
Yeah, we're going to play.
Okay. Number two, it's an unseasonably warm day, November.
I like it.
But you'd be blowing off a prior commitment, and it's only temporary greens.
What kind of commitment?
Like, you know, maybe you have, like, dinner with your wife or something like that.
Yeah, temp greens.
Right.
I'm kind of over it.
Temp greens?
I don't like temp greens.
Yeah, there you go.
It's like not really playing.
Yeah, because then you always finish, and then you're like, what could I have shot if
weren't
temp
you're
greens?
Like, man, I really was working it.
Yeah,
though.
Like.
I was right. striking it.
And yeah, like that stupid thing where you do temporary greens.
Two
like,
putt,
yeah.
But then you try to make it, and like, you have one that like should have gone in, but it stays just out, and you're
mm-hmm.
like,
right.
You have no score.
And it's also like, it's always like 40 yards in front of the green, so you suddenly feel like you're the longest player on tour because you're hitting wedges,
exactly,
and then you realize
exactly,
you're not.
Exactly. You're
right.
Like, wow, this hole's too easy.
Yeah.
You know, it depends. You said November. If it was like in February and something popped up, that
right,
might be
right, because now
different.
You feel like
maybe
you're stealing.
Another,
right.
Maybe
you're
that's when
I should have said it. You feel like you're stealing time.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're so itching to get out there. That'd be different. But at this point, I'm kind of like shut down for the year.
I'm on the down as opposed to on the up.
Yeah. Okay. So, this is your first full fall winter in New York, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
tough. But I don't know. I get used to it. Like once the weather gets bad, I just kind of it's not as fun, and I kind of shut it down. But you're probably like really itching to get out there.
I am. I mean, I'm missing it. I'm excited a little bit to get home for Thanksgiving so I can play some golf in Florida.
Exactly.
But no, I'm definitely wondering. I'm like, when am I going to be able to hit a ball again?
Yeah.
All right. This is a good one. Number three. You've been invited to a bucket list course, you know, figure top 10, top 20 in the world. But the invite is from someone who annoys the shit out of you.
Mm.
And you will be indebted to him way more than you want. And I call this, a.k.a., the Kenny Banya dilemma.
Oh,
you know
I
what
like
that means, right?
Yes, yes.
I don't. Explanation?
It's a Seinfeld explanation. Oh, okay. Like the guy gives him a suit. He's a really annoying guy. The guy gives him a suit, but now he has to be friends with him and have dinner with the guy.
And he eventually gives the suit away. He just doesn't.
Because he doesn't want to deal with Kenny Banya. So that's the thing. There's a specific person I have in mind here who I'm not going to name.
Oh, man. That is so tough. Top 10 course?
Yeah. Like you
would. I would do it.
You would do it.
I would do it. And I would be, like, best friends with the person, too.
Right. And you'll just like you'll have that person in your life forever.
Yeah. I would still do it.
Would you? But you're a snob. Like, you've already had it every time.
Wow.
I mean, you've had a lot of great access to great courses, so.
What were you going to say? No?
I would try and determine what's the probability that I could get on this course another time with somebody else.
Well, that's a big part of it. I'm kind of operating an assumption that, like, you
it's not going to happen.
Yeah. You won't? Yeah. Okay, then I go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I will say, just going back to the way I feel about it.
Have you done that?
No, because me being me, again, would you play? Yes, but like the enjoyment element, like I would be so, it would be such a thing that would be weighing on me, and it would affect my enjoyment that day, knowing that that's hanging over my head.
But are you annoyed with this person, or you hate this person?
Well, somewhere in between. Okay. Like, you just don't want to deal. Like, you don't want to deal. You don't want to have this, you know. And because I want to be genuine, I don't want to use someone.
So are you saying Alex and I are users?
A little bit.
But they offered you.
I understand that. But there's
no.
I just wouldn't enjoy it.
If I didn't like that. If they annoyed me, they weren't my favorite person in the world, I probably would just do it. But if they weren't like I genuinely didn't like them, then I wouldn't go.
All right, number four, last one. You're invited by your boss to play a great course, but the invite is in direct conflict with a work assignment that said boss is monitoring closely. So in other words, you got a lot going on in your business or your work, whatever you're doing, and you have a big thing on Thursday, and that same day, the boss says, hey, you want to play golf at really nice course on Thursday.
So he's like testing you?
Well, or he's just kind of like, he's so far removed that he doesn't understand like that that's something for you is happening that day. But he obviously cares about your execution.
You've had that happen. I know you've had that happen.
Maybe, but you've had it happen.
Yeah, maybe. What do you think?
Ooh, it's so if it's an actual thing that I'm doing on that day that I have to be, if it's like giving a presentation or something, then obviously I'm not going to go play golf with my boss. But if it's like a huge project that I'm just working on that's going to be due at the end of the week, then maybe I try to really work really hard on it earlier in that week and maybe pull an all-nighter before or something.
It's funny you bring this up. The boss thing and the playing a top 10 or good course. I just got an invite on Thursday to play a great course, Waikigo, and I think I'm going to take it up. And I'm asking you now on the air as my boss to kind of.
But you've played Waikigo before.
I've never played Waikigo before.
No.
I've never played it before. If I'd played it before, I wouldn't do it. So
should we do another podcast segment? Should we let Alex play?
So I'm asking you now on air.
I have no problem
this.
Being a jerk on the air.
Oh, damn.
There's no problem just laying the hammer
this
down.
This is backfiring. It's also a good tune-up for the Sites Cup.
Right. Okay, fine. So. All right, we'll see.
Woo! I'm in. All right. That was a good segment. I like it. Okay, we got some other awards as we run down. We wrap up here. Best one-day story. The Ryder Cup opening ceremony in 2022 could be at the Colosseum
Amazing.
In Rome.
Right.
It's pretty good. But what I'm saying it's the best one-day story is because we're all like, wow, it's pretty cool. And then we realize the opening ceremony still sucks.
I was exactly the same.
It's awful.
It doesn't make the opening ceremony any less painful to watch.
Right.
I mean, it makes for a great visual, and that's it.
Maybe though they have lions coming out.
I
want to
know who's gonna perform. Yeah, I
want to
know who's gonna perform.
Yeah,
right.
Well, because
that was weird.
It was weird. Yeah. Right. And then, but imagine if then you could do a thumbs up, thumb down, and the lions just go after them. Whoever, some no name.
Like,
why did they get? I know Justin Timberlake did that awful poem, and he gets canned for that and whatever.
He did a poem for the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, in 2012 at Medina, it was awful.
He read a poem.
It was a golf poem. It was so bad. It was really bad. But anyway, usually they get these performers who you've never heard
of. Well, they're big in Europe.
But how are they? Yeah, I guess. Anyway, I don't know. What do you think, Callie? Colosseum, you in?
I'm in. I'd go.
It sounds awesome. I mean, this year we had the gala at the Palace of Versailles.
Right.
So
they're stepping it up.
Europe is kind of kicking our butts. I mean, what are they going to do in...
Was it Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing really they can do. Rider, maybe like the Pabst Blue Ribbon Brewery. Is that such a, that's such a Wisconsin cliche.
At Hazeltine, they had some event at the Mall of America.
I mean, it's just not good. It's not really good.
The Colosseum or the Palace of Versailles. Okay, all right. This week in Pros Are Just Like Us, and it involves Halloween costumes, which Sam.
Say, Holly, do you celebrate Halloween?
Yeah.
Just curious.
No, I was gonna say, like, my daughter, it was her first Halloween. She was a strawberry. Sam, you have your kids.
Right.
They were dressing up. Like Hallie, just to show, I mean, the difference here, right. She had about 10 costumes.
Exactly.
What were you?
Run through them?
Yeah, run through them.
Okay. The first one was a, oh, I'll work backwards. I was a space cadet.
Okay.
Somebody told me cadet means somebody stupid. Does that mean
Space cadet means you're not really paying attention.
Space cadet means, yeah, you're like out there.
Oh, okay.
See, only a space cadet would not know the meaning of a space
yes.
cadet.
Yes, that's pretty, wow.
Okay, yeah. So I was a space cadet. I have to like look back on social media because I'm forgetting.
God. This is proof.
You were
so many costumes that she doesn't even remember
well,
them.
Well, I'll say the one. You and Nicole Ray combined to be Mollywood.
Yes.
Genius.
Maybe the best, genius. I'm not, I mean,
seriously.
That was
her idea.
Well, genius. And you guys pulled it off. They were Francesca Molinari and Tommy Fleetwood, obviously.
Easily one of the best 12 costumes you wore this year.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know where it ranked for you. It would have been the best I've ever done. But yeah, for you, yeah.
So we had that. We had Space Cadet. We had the Hall of Famers, which were, we had my friend who was the Golden Bear. She wore a bear onesie.
Right.
And we painted her face gold. And then I was... Tiger.
Oh, Hall of Fame golfers.
Yes. Okay. I just wore a Tiger onesie with a Tiger Woods hat.
Nice.
And then Michelle Wee wore a shark onesie and had like a Greg Norman-esque hat on, which was
mesh
great.
Mesh cowboy hat?
Yes. And then I was also Miguel Angel Jimenez. That was my favorite.
That's okay. That's
I
mean, four?
At least
that's
four.
That's good. It's impressive.
Yeah.
What's the bill on all those costumes? And how many of those will you be expensing for content?
I expensed 2.
Wow.
No, what? One. I expense one. Just one.
It's amazing.
But two. No.
Well done.
Two. Mollywood. Yeah.
It's really good.
Two costumes.
If you haven't seen it, check out the Mollywood. It's on the Golf Digest Instagram feed.
I had to paint a beard on Nicole.
Yeah. The level of commitment to that was very good. You guys really kept it under wraps, too, although I heard because you were unsure if all the pieces were going to get there.
Yeah, we didn't know if the wigs were going to get there in time.
So you didn't want to, like, say it and then not happen. It was very good. But obviously, we saw a lot of through professional golf. You mentioned Michelle. She also did a good Adams Family.
Yes, Wednesday Adams.
Wednesday Adams.
That was great.
I think most people's favorite was Michael Greller's son. He's Jordan Spieth's caddy. He stuck him in like Jordan Spieth's golf bag, basically, and had his head just sticking out. It was an AT&T bag with some clubs. It was very funny. It was good. Sam, did you have anything stick out to you?
No. I mean, I'm trying to think.
You didn't do anything, right?
No.
I like Justin Thomas riding the dinosaur.
Oh, I was going to ask you that. What is that? Because I saw that when I was passing out 1,500 pieces of candy in my block. I did see that costume, and I said, hey, Justin Thomas did that. The kid had no idea what he was talking about.
Yeah. But, he's like, cool, dude.
Is that, like, from something?
No, I think it was just, like, a funny costume of a guy
riding
a dinosaur.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it worked. It was funny. Anyway, good stuff from Halloween. All right, now next, our stat of the week, and it goes back to Justin Rose, and it's courtesy of Justin Ray at Golf Channel. Since the beginning of 2017, we talk about consistency here. Justin Rose has made 31 starts worldwide. 24 times he's finished in the top 10. And
that's amazing.
The second level of that is he has almost as many wins, 5, as non-top 10s, 7 in that stretch. So
amazing.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
He deserves to be number one. I mean, again, when Brooks Koepka wins next week, I'll say the same thing about him. But like you said, Sam, there's the four guys at the top have really separated themselves, at least until Bryson gets enough points to catch up to them.
Right.
But,
it goes back to the kind of question, what is more impressive in golf at the professional level? Is it winning or more difficult, winning or being in contention every week?
It's tough. I mean, being in contention every week is probably the toughest because the only person that really did it was Tiger.
Right.
And Rose even, I mean, this is crazy. Now if Tiger had 24 top 10s and 31 starts, he would have won 10 of those times.
Right.
That's the difference. But other than Tiger,
but take Tiger out of the equation.
No, exactly. Yeah. Take. I mean, there's no way if you go back, even like a Jordan Spieth has had a run like this with 24 top tens, 31, or definitely not a Rory McIlroy. Dustin Johnson might be the closest.
Right.
Dustin Johnson is great at winning and consistently contending, but still, just amazing stuff by Justin Rose. All right, finally, we're wrapping up here. We have the Mayakoba Golf Classic this week. Guys, picks, early picks?
Help. Going with Cameron Champ.
All right, come on. Keep it going.
Sir, yeah, there you go. Cameron Champ. He played in this last year as sponsor exemption.
Okay.
Didn't make the cut, but.
But so he's got a little. But
I think he's going to get the job done again.
He's rolling. I mean, it's tough not to to pick him. I know entering last week he was already, I think he was like 25-1 or something. He should start to be one of the guys who's one of the favorites at some of these events. Sam, did you?
I'm going to go actually more of a feel-good story. What I want to have happen is Bud Cauley, obviously coming off an injury.
Good mention.
And actually, he has a
great,
and he had a great week last night. He finished top 10, so and finished really strong because he three scores in the 60s to close out the week. And so it's not just a sentimental pick. It's a guy who's actually enjoying some good form.
Very good. You know, this is one of the few courses that's under 7,000 yards, so I'm actually not going to pick Champ. I'm going to, you know, this is a chance for a non-bomber. I'm going to throw a couple names out there. Charles Howell, who's like Mr. kind of fall wraparound season guy, and Ches Reavie. Both of them, a lot of success at this event. Reavie was T4, T14 the last couple years. Howell, top 10, three of the last 5 years. They both have one top 10 already under their belt. In Asia. So, again, you know, these are the week for these guys maybe to step up and fill in. So, we'll see. So far, the picks this year have not been
no, that's okay. No one knows that. It sounds impressive in
it
the
does,
moment.
It does sound. Yeah, exactly. And again, Golf Digest put Cameron Champ on the cover. So, that's
right.
We'll all pat ourselves on the back collectively for that. All right, guys, it was fun. Thanks again for listening. Thanks to Cameron Champ for joining us. Please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts if you haven't done so already, and please check back next week to see who our guest is.